Everybody, Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I am Ben Ennis, and it's August. And when we have a local sporting event, you're not supposed to have a rain out. But you know what? It kind of happened at a perfect time yesterday for the Blue Jays as the slate was cleared for the tennis and the National Bank Open, and the results are in. Yeah, we're a tennis country. And Arash Madani loves to troll with the best of them. And yeah, he tweeted out the information I'm going to give you a little more specifically. But yeah, the tennis did a bigger number on television yesterday than the World Junior Hockey Championships in Canada in action. Yeah, I get it. I get it. It's August and it's, yeah, against not the United States, but 362,000 people decided that they wanted to see what I told them to see, and many more, well, not many more, but many in attendance in person to see Serena Williams' final match in this fair country. She lost to Belinda Bencic, and she looked not like the woman that's won 23 Grand Slams, and it is a stark reminder that while sometimes sports are like the movies, sometimes it plays out like the storybook. Yeah, not all the time. And Tiger Woods, you know, coming all the way back within a year after almost losing his leg, it doesn't mean that he's going to win another major or even compete in one. And Serena Williams in her final couple of months playing professional tennis doesn't mean that she's going to go out on top. It probably means that she's going to be not dissimilar to the player that she's been the last half decade, which is, you know, a puncher's chance in a very wide open women's slate of tennis players, but not quite the dominant force she once was. But it was a nice little send off. Huge, huge hometown crowd that later supported Bianca Andreescu, but really, really, we're cheering on a woman that's lost twice in pretty significant moments to Bianca Andreescu, Serena Williams. So that was cool to see. Sent her off with some jerseys that she'll never wear. But that was great. And yeah, we don't need to see another Blue Jays Orioles game. We'll save that for Labor Day. Let the tennis take center stage. Blue Jays with a pair of days off now. And I guess here there's two ways to look at it. One is you want to get back on the horse, right? Like you don't want to have that awful taste in your mouth of losing, I guess, is that a series sweep? I don't know if you consider that makeup game on Labor Day as part of that series, but you want to get that awful taste of blowing a late game lead to the Baltimore Orioles out of your mouth, and you want to play yesterday, or you don't want to play games when George Springer's not available, because and I mentioned the numbers yesterday. You're a much better team with George Springer. And any day that goes by where you're not playing a baseball game or you're winning a baseball game and George Springer's in the lineup, that's a win. So yesterday, kind of a win for the Blue Jays as they get two straight days off. They get to set the rotation however they want against a Cleveland Guardians team that is a bit of a surprise as well, not to the degree at which the Baltimore Orioles are, but one that's very much in the playoff mix right now, in fact, leading the American League Central. You know what? In an alternate reality, because I don't know if you've been paying attention, there was baseball yesterday. Blue Jays didn't play it, but there was a pretty significant baseball game in Seattle. The Mariners took 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. Yankees have lost 8 of their last 10. And in an alternate reality, we're having conversations not about the Blue Jays being on the verge of dropping outside of the American League wildcard picture, but one in which, holy cow, like it is not out of the realm of possibility that the Blue Jays catch and pass the New York Yankees for the American League East division lead. Instead, it's a 10-game lead for the Yankees over the Blue Jays, but they are not at all playing their best baseball. I mean, Aaron Judge still is. He had another home run. He's got 45, which is insane. And he's on pace for 59 home runs this season, which is turning into one of the biggest stories in all of sports. But, yeah, the Blue Jays had it right in front of them. If only they'd picked up a couple of wins against teams that are ahead of them in the standings and teams that they are expected to beat in the Baltimore Orioles. But, yeah. Huge series coming up against the Guardians at Rogers Center starting tomorrow. And then they got another series against the Baltimore Orioles after that. Had a little bit of this conversation on Blue Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy and J.D. Bunkus a couple hours ago. You can set your rotation any way you'd like right now. It'll be interesting to see what the Blue Jays do. Because Alek Manoah is the ace of the staff, unquestionably. Kevin Gausman's been great. But Alek Manoah is going to get the start in game one of whatever postseason series you're playing in. And it's, at this point, likely a wild card series, whether it's in Toronto or somewhere else is yet to be decided. That's all well and good, but Alek Manoah doesn't look like the same guy recently. And his ERA has been climbing each and every month this season, and it's a topic of conversation in that front office, in that clubhouse. Is this the opportunity the Blue Jays use to give him a breather? Because you're trying to balance two things. His health, him being in pristine shape for the postseason, and then, you know, getting to the playoffs, which seems like number one priority. But I don't know when you're talking about the ace of the staff for the next half decade. Let's talk to somebody who will help us answer that question and more. As Shai Davidi is part of today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles. Hello, Shai. Happy off day.
How are you?
I'm all right. It's a lot of no baseball for, you know, August. I kind of miss it. There are other games, though, as I mentioned. The Blue Jays are in a dogfight to make the playoffs, which I guess you could have anticipated, but it really felt like they were about to take off under John Schneider and have hit hard times recently. Why are things so precarious right now? If, like, you had to identify a couple of reasons, what would they be?
I mean, I don't know that I would say they're precarious, right? You know, they went, they're 2-4 in their past six. Against, you know, one of them is the hottest team in the American League. The other is another playoff team that's going to be a factor in October. You know, they weren't going to play 700 baseball for the rest of the year. So I don't know that we should kind of ring the alarms just yet, but they've got a few things going on. One, George Springer hasn't been healthy and is on the injured list right now. When even when he was healthy, he wasn't totally himself. You've got a few ups and downs in the pitching staff. The bullpen's had a couple rough moments, and certainly the Yusei Kikuchi continues to be a bit of a question mark. Ross Stripling trying to figure out how to get him back to health. So, you know, you have all these factors that created a little blip, but I'm not sure I'm ready to jump into crisis mode just yet.
No, not crisis mode, but they're only two games up on the playoffs. They added an extra team, right? And there's a lot of baseball still to be played, 52 games worth. And the conversation might be very different by the end of the season. A lot of things to be decided in these final 50 plus games. But I will say this is a team with still World Series aspirations, and anything can happen when you get to a postseason, but one that went into the season with World Series aspirations and one that expected to compete atop the division, and the Yankees got off to that insane start. I understand that, but no, this is, it's hard to argue anything other than the Blue Jays have been in an overall disappointment, a slight disappointment. I know they lead the wild card, but it's, can you make an argument that this hasn't been a disappointing first 110 games?
I think they've definitely underperformed their ability, but they're still in control of their own fate. They are in the top wild card spot, unless those standings changed last night, but I don't think they did.
No.
And they still have one of the most formidable rosters. Now, do they have issues? For sure they have issues. Do they have things they're going to have to overcome? For sure. But everyone else that's in and around them has a flaw or two, just like the Blue Jays do, and they're not having this season where everything falls into place, or at least a portion of the season, the way that it did for the Yankees, where basically up until July, everything they touched turned to gold, and they've had a few blips since. But this is a season where the Blue Jays are going to have to struggle and overcome a bit more adversity. And that's kind of where they're at this moment in time.
Yep. And George Springer's return will help if he returns. And the report when he went on the IL from the manager himself was that it's going to be a short stint. They just need to have him rest the elbow for a little bit, and he'll return, I guess, in the minimum 10 games. What is he when he comes back, though, Shai? I imagine you're going to try and get him as many DH reps as possible. I mean, corner outfield, do they expect that to be less wear and tear? I don't know if it is necessarily on the elbow, but yeah, what is George Springer's final 40-plus games look like?
I mean, that's really one of the critical questions before this team right now, and a lot of that's going to depend on what he is when he's healthy. And look, when he's been healthy, he's been one of the most productive players on the roster. And when he's had to fight through physical ailments, both this year and last, he's clearly been a lesser version of himself. And he looked, in the lead up to the IL stint, about as uncomfortable as we've seen him this year, you know, wincing and grimacing after any type of movement, intense movement on that elbow, or any sort of pressure on that elbow. So, you know, this time off should allow him to come back in a stronger version of himself. And if he does, then certainly that's going to be a contribution. But, you know, there's also the potential that the Blue Jays have to manage this the rest of the way. And that's, you know, a few off days and not using him all the day in and day out, or purposely resting him, or maybe accepting that he may be a diminished version of himself for the rest of the year. And that he's going to have to, you know, use his brain and some opportunity, be a bit more opportunistic rather than just letting his physical abilities drive things. So, you know, I think that's really the question that everybody's wondering, like, how much recovery can he cram into this IL stint? And I think that's going to be the determining factor in terms of what he looks like when he comes back.
Boy, it would have been a lot easier for the Blue Jays if they had the type of lead that the Yankees have in the division right now, that they could kind of, you know, you feel a little bit better about managing your roster and maybe extending the IL stint for George Springer and maybe, you know, shutting down Alek Manoah for a couple of starts. Because, yeah, I mentioned it, the ERA, all the numbers basically have gone up month by month for Alek Manoah. But he's gutted it through. I mean, you take what you got from him through five innings, I guess, and Blue Jays had a lead in that baseball game. But I do wonder if there's a tug and a pull when it comes to the long-term future of the ace of your staff and the immediacy of making the playoffs and winning baseball games right now.
Well, for sure. Look, I mean, Alek Manoah to some degree is in uncharted territory because he's at a career high for innings logged, and he hasn't had to go through a full season wire-to-wire quite this way, carry the type of load that he has. And he's been so good, particularly in the early part of the season, is that, you know, those innings just accumulated quickly because he was pitching so well. And that didn't give the Blue Jays really an opportunity to maybe think about dialing it back or saving a few innings here and there to keep him a little bit fresher to this point. The thing is, I can also see how the Blue Jays will feel about this in terms of they're going to sort of monitor him with their objective measures, make sure that he's not doing anything where he's putting himself at risk. And as long as there are no outward signs that, you know, any possible fatigue or wearing down that he may be experiencing is putting him at any sort of risk, he'll continue to get the ball, right? We saw the Blue Jays do this back in 2016 with Aaron Sanchez when he was breaking some uncharted personal ground for him, ended up logging 200 plus innings when you factored in the playoffs. And so, you know, this isn't new. The Blue Jays have more tools to gauge things. And Alek Manoah isn't going to give up the ball easily from what we've all know of him. So yes, this is a concern. It's definitely something that needs to be monitored, but it's also something that maybe needs to play out a little bit too, because no pitcher goes wire to wire with, you know, in a linear line of over the course of a season. Everyone has some dips, and maybe this is just one of those, you know, periods of time where he dips a little bit and then eventually recovers.
Yeah, but this is kind of a linear line, right? Like it's going up. It's going straight up. And I know it's not completely straight, but there's other numbers to evaluate it than ERA. But yeah, he doesn't look like the same guy we saw early in the season. Yeah, you're right. Like there's probably ways the Blue Jays are measuring his workload and his fatigue level that are more precise than me just looking at his month by month ERA pretty clearly. But you do have the opportunity to skip him, right? Like this is 2 days off here. You got another day off this month on the 22nd. Of course, now you have a doubleheader on Labor Day, but there's a bunch of off days in September as well, Shy. Now, it means that, you know, you don't get to skip a Yusei Kikuchi or at this point a Mitch White or a Ross Stripling or whatever. Like, yeah, could you see a scenario where it's even, hey, just a start missed here, a start missed there? Or do you really just, I mean, because missing the playoffs is such a disaster. Can you not even afford to do that mathematics?
I would think, and I haven't asked anyone specifically about this, so this is just my speculation here, but unless there's a reason, an objective reason for it, then I don't necessarily think they're going to do that. They'll just let him start and stay on turn. Now, if there's something that's pointing to some benefit to that, again, some sort of measure beyond, oh, he's had a couple starts where he didn't look like his dominant self, yeah, then that's sort of a different conversation. But for the time being, unless there was something that was definitively pointing to some real benefit to that or some justification to it or a need for it, you know, I think you're letting it run.
So you need reasons to do things? You don't just do them?
Well, I mean, typically, I mean, we're not all radio hosts who just scream out loud based on impulse of the moment.
Oh, okay. I guess. I suppose there is, yeah, process is important. All right. I'll give you that one. If George Springer doesn't play another game in center field for this Blue Jays team, which is possible, or maybe it happens late in the season or in the postseason, maybe, like, I think it's maybe not likely, but very possible that we've seen the last of George Springer in center field this season. Maybe the last of George Springer playing the field at all this season, which would really put a crimp into Alejandro Kirk's playing time, and I'm not sure how exactly that would work out. Who do the Blue Jays like better? Let's just talk about offense. Rymel Tapia or Whit Merrifield? Because there was a curious pinch hit of Tapia for Merrifield in Minnesota. Who do the Blue Jays like in that, against righties especially?
You know, the way that they've been doing things the last few years, and more teams around baseball are doing things this way, is that it's not just you like one specific guy in this situation or over the other, or you just look at straight platoon advantage, right? It's about how does your swing plane match up against a pitcher's movement profile. And that's a matchup that, you know, will be not predetermined before the game, but one of the things that teams will do is that they'll match up their different hitters versus an opponent's different pitchers. And they say, well, you know, if we get into a situation and we've got a chance to hit player X for player Y against pitcher Z, then that's a matchup that we like. And then if that opportunity comes up during the game, that's how the Blue Jays would approach it. So it's not just as simple as, you know, we like Merrifield in leverage, or, you know, like we like Tapia versus certain righties. It's all about, you know, who is the best matchup at that point in time. And then there's some external factors that play into it as well, in terms of, you know, how's the guy feeling physically? How has he been hitting at the plate in the last little while? How has he been seeing the ball? All those different things. Did he have a good hitting session earlier in the day? All those things can influence that decision. But it's never just as simple as, you know, let's, you know, player X for this situation all the time. It's always about a matchup in a moment.
Jose Barrios, we think, is going to get pushed back his start that was supposed to be yesterday. He'll just start game one of the series against the Guardians, which is good because that's at home. And yesterday would have been on the road, which is, okay, yeah, I don't know. This has happened before, right? And there's been many a player many a pitcher who have had weird stats like this. It's seemingly a large sample, 11 starts home and road for Barrios, but over the course of a career, I guess it's not all that meaningful. Do the Blue Jays do anything with that information? Is that just like just a weird, weird coincidence that he's been remarkably better at home than he's been on the road?
Yeah, that one really is bizarre. And, you know, aside from, you know, give him some like VR goggles so make it look like he's pitching at Rogers Center, I'm not sure what you could really do about that beyond just running him out there. And it's happened before. It was actually kind of funny when the Tigers were in town and Drew Hutchison pitched well. You may remember that Drew Hutchison had those seasons where, you know, was great at Toronto and struggled on the road. And so I saw him and said, hey, still pitching well in Toronto. And he kind of quipped, well, it's not, I'm on the road now, so does it still count? So it definitely can get into players' heads and they remember things like that. With Barrios, I can't imagine this is anything other than a bizarre aberration. You know, I mean, this is someone who's had success wherever he's pitched throughout his career, and he's just been having an odd season as it stands. So I'm not sure that there's much to read into that, and even less that there's anything to do about it.
All right, before we let you go, I have MLB Network on right here, and they're getting ready for the Field of Dreams game, which is, it's been a rousing success. Like that first game was awesome. White Sox, Yankees, and Tim Anderson going ham. And I understand why, you know, the Blue Jays haven't played in it or not rumored to be playing in it because it's a nationally televised game in the United States and the Canadian ratings don't impact whoever has the broadcast right south of the border for this game. But, you know, the Blue Jays have a pretty large fan base. And you know what? The ratings north of the border still count for something. And I'm sure there's some leverage that ownership can use here. Do you think the Blue Jays ever play in this game if they continue it?
Well, the collective bargaining agreement, the expectation is that, you know, all teams will participate in either one of those marquee games, right? There's also the Little League one and perhaps some other things that they concoct at some point. And then some international play as well. And you know, I do believe the Blue Jays have some interest in playing in London eventually. They weren't picked for next year. But I wonder if that's one that ends up happening for the Blue Jays, maybe even before something like the Field of Dreams game.
Oh, okay. Like a regular season game you're talking about in London.
Yeah.
All right. I think that would be good because that would be morning, right? Afternoon at the worst? That'd be good for us.
I think so.
I'd take that. No corn, but yeah, no, I'd take that. All right, Shai, thank you for this. Enjoy the rest of your day off.
You got it, Ben. Take care, man.
All right, you too. There is Shai Davidi, and he helped us dissect today's top story, which was brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. Yeah, I like the Field of Dreams game. It's not my favorite movie. I like the backdrop. I don't know if everybody has to, like, dress up like they're in the 1920s. That's probably a little bit too much. But I like the idea of hitting. I like when you can hit a home run into something, right? I got like it. What's the ballpark called now in San Francisco? AT&T, is it still? Hitting the ball into McCovey Cove. Like, I like that. I like hitting a home run into a field of corn. I like that. It'd be cool if the Blue Jays could participate in that. I don't know what the plan is for these London games. Are they going to play the Lord's Cricket Yard? There's a tree, I think, in the middle of the outfield at Lord's, so that seems bad. I don't think you can do that. Can you hit it off Big Ben? Like, are they going to play next to Big Ben? You hit it into the Thames River? It's called Oracle Park for the Giants. Sorry, my bad. I understand getting American franchises in this game, but I'll tell you, you know what? I'll say it definitively. The Blue Jays against the Mariners at the Field of Dreams game is going to do a better rating than the Reds and the Cubs, two complete also-rans in the National League. And the Cubs have national appeal, but they're totally irrelevant this year, and the Reds have none. So, I think the I think Major League Baseball could have done better with the Blue Jays this year, but that's besides the point. All right, when we come back, there are more Kevin Durant reports after he reportedly told Joe Tsai, fire the coach who I handpicked, fire the GM who brought me over here, and I'll return. And then Joe Tsai said, go screw. Since then, we have a report that he's met up with James Harden in England and wants to reunite with him. That report was from our next guest, Frank Isola of ESPN's Around the Horn, PTI, SiriusXM, NBA Radio, and the Nets on Yes. He joins me next. The Fan Drive Time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, I'm Ben Ennis. And I do appreciate Kevin Durant dropping these little nuggets in the month of August. It's when we need the content. Be better if there was something a little more concrete, but we'll take, hey, fire the coach and the GM and I'll come back. And then the owner saying no. And then we'll also take, hey, you know, I want to reunite with the guy who forced his way onto my team and then off of it last year. So I'll take that for an August topic of conversation. And we will have that conversation with Frank Isola of ESPN's Around the Horn and PTI, SiriusXM, NBA Radio, and the Nets on Yes. How's it going, Frank?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So the report that Durant would return to the Nets if they fired Steve Nash and Sean Marks, what do you think the goal was with that demand?
I mean, you're really drawing a line in the sand there. And after that report came out, you know, Durant didn't deny it. You know, he is pretty active on social media. And if it weren't true, I would think that's something you'd want to deny. I mean, you know, Steve Nash obviously has some status in the league as a, you know, two-time MVP in the league, and he's well-liked by a lot of people. So that whole part of it is really awkward. But I think, you know, maybe Durant must just be trying to force the Nets' hand. But still, you know, the one thing the Nets have, he is on the contract for 4 years. And I just don't think, to me, Kevin Durant does not come across as the kind of guy that is going to sit out during training camp. You know, then you'll get fined and he's going to miss games. I mean, I think the guy is about playing. So I still think the Nets are holding out some kind of hope that cooler heads eventually will prevail, even though, I mean, to be fair, if he shows up the first day of camp, it's going to be a little awkward. I mean, two of the guys that are going to be working as Sean Marks and Steve Nash are two guys that, you know, reportedly you said, you know, in order for you to stay, you'd want to see them gone. So that part of it still has to be sorted out.
Yeah, that seems like an indication that he's not eventually going to play ball. I mean, people's opinions change, and maybe this is just playing hardball. There was also that report that his meeting with Joe Tsai was super professional. I guess it could be professional if you lay out terms just bluntly. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think how can it be labeled professional when you showed up at a meeting with the owner of a team and you asked for two people to be fired? I guarantee you Sean Marks and Steve Nash probably didn't think it was professional. No. I don't understand. I've never heard of something like that. A meeting where you meet with the owner and you want, in theory, your two supervisors fired. I don't know how that's to me, that's a lot of things. Professionalism isn't one of them.
No, I mean, I guess it's kind of like a professional hitman. Like, I don't,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Using a silencer.
So, and then we had the Joe Tsai tweet. Our front office and coaching staff have my support. We will make decisions in the best interest of the Brooklyn Nets. It does at this point feel like a staring contest. And I was going to say the player always wins, but I don't know. Is that the case when we're talking about Ben Simmons? Because Daryl Morey did, I mean, it didn't work out necessarily, but he got the superstar in James Harden for Ben Simmons. Is that instructive in how we should view this thing going forward?
Well, you know, yeah, they got the player for Ben Simmons. They also made it to game six of the second round. Last year, Ben Simmons got to a game seven. you know, his last season with the Philadelphia 76ers, and Harden did not play well in the postseason. He did have the one good game, but he was not very good in game six. So, you know, everyone, it is interesting how everyone's kind of forgotten that Harden did not play well last season, did not play well in the playoffs. Simmons has a long way to go to kind of prove that he could still be a top player. But that's why, for me, you look at the Brooklyn Nets, you know, and I've harped on this a bunch. You know, last year, you know, Durant played 55 games. When he left the team after he got injured, I should say, they were in first place at the time. And then they had to fight to get the seventh seed. But he played 55. Harden played 44. Didn't want to be there for most of it. So think about that. Kyrie played 29, the vaccination status. Joe Harris got hurt early in the season, had two ankle surgeries. He played 14. And Ben Simmons played zero games. So, you know, everyone, you know, you look at the results and they got swept by Boston, but I don't think all hope is lost. I mean, Joe Harris is healthy. Ben Simmons is going to play, and he's still a 6'10" guy that can handle the ball, defend, and rebound. Kyrie Irving is going to be on the last year of his contract. You'd hope that he's going to, you know, be on somewhat of his best behavior. And you still have Kevin Durant with Seth Curry. To me, it's, and you know, got Patty Mills coming off the bench. They're not in the worst situation. That's why I think Kevin Durant would just sit back a little bit and realize what's out there. And understand that it's hard to make a trade because, remember, the Nets are looking to get a player back and they want picks because the Nets are not looking to rebuild. Their roster is, you know, they want to remain competitive. So it's not like they're trading Kevin Durant to blow the whole thing up. That's not what they're doing.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think there's really no argument against what you said, that if Kevin Durant just says, you know what, I have a contract and I don't want to be here, but I have no choice but to show up and play basketball to the best of my ability, all of a sudden, they're one of the favorites, not just to come out of the East, but to win the whole damn thing. But clearly that's the thinking and the trade demand goes beyond, hey, I don't think I can win here, right? Like, maybe you have a better sense than me because, you know, from an outsider's perspective, it feels like he feels hard done by with the way that they handled his good buddy Kyrie. But Kyrie doesn't feel like he has any shot of moving this offseason. How? Well, like, why? This is a simple question. Why do you think Kevin Durant wants to leave?
Yeah, I think a lot of things. You know, if you go back to two seasons ago when they swept, they beat Boston in five games. They took Milwaukee to seven. Durant was outstanding in that series. You know, so they lost to the team that ends up going to the finals and winning. And during that series, they were up 2-0 in the series against Milwaukee. Harden got hurt, and then Kyrie got hurt. So, you know, they look like they were the team to beat two seasons ago in the NBA. Last year, the whole thing's a mess, starting with the vaccination status. Then Joe Harris got hurt. Then you had Harden didn't want to be there. Kevin Durant gets injured. They end up getting swept. So I think Durant was – you know, I just think he's that kind of guy. He's probably starting to have his doubts, but I think what triggered everything was almost like it was a burning flame. Then the gasoline on top of the flame, I think, was the Warriors winning the championship. Because, you know, here he is 3 years after he left that team. They won the title. If you look in recent history, it took the Lakers 6 years after Shaq left for them to win a championship. Miami got back to the finals, I believe it was 5 years after LeBron left. And they ended up losing in the finals. Here's Golden State, and Kevin Durant's supposed to be an all-time legendary player, which he is. It took them 3 years to win. And I think the Warriors winning messed with his head a little bit, and now he's getting kind of desperate. And the idea that, yeah, I want to go to the Celtics or the Phoenix Suns. Well, what are the Nets supposed to get? The Nets are going to take back Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, two guys that are probably never going to average 15 points per game in the NBA, and maybe get some draft picks. Or are you going to trade him to Boston? Unless I'm getting Jaylen Brown back, and something else, why would I do that deal if I'm the Brooklyn Nets? He wants to join, just like he did with Golden State, a ready-made team that's on the cusp of winning a championship. Remember, his two teams to begin with that he wanted to go to when this whole thing started was Phoenix and the Boston Celtics, the last two runners-up in the NBA Finals. So it's no surprise or it's no mystery to what he's trying to do, but I still think you know, the Nets, if he comes back and is healthy, I think they're going to be as competitive as anybody.
Yeah, no, like his best shot to stick it to everybody might be to stay in Brooklyn. That's why it's a head scratcher. And then your report about he and Harden being on pleasant terms and meeting up in Europe, because I would have thought that the way that ended in Brooklyn would have meant hard feelings between the two. What can you tell me about how Kevin Durant and James Harden are relating to each other right now?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it that Kevin Durant would love to go to Philadelphia and play with James Harden. And I thought the same thing. If you go back to the All-Star game draft, when Harden was the last player taken, and LeBron, to his credit, was trying to egg on Kevin Durant to get him to say something about it, but he wouldn't do it. So you thought, like, their relationship back in February was in the toilet, but, you know, they're clearly hanging out in Europe. They went to that concert together. It just so happened that that Kevin Durant met with Joe Tsai, the owner of the Nets, while they was in London as well. The whole thing is bizarre. But remember, a deal with the Philadelphia 76ers, they've already made it the Harden trade with Philadelphia, and the Nets are getting back two future first-round picks from Philadelphia. So if you give them Kevin Durant, right away you damage those how good those draft picks are going to be. Because, you know, Durant goes there. They're going to be, one of the top six teams in the NBA? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be you're not going to be getting a great draft pick. Plus, what are you going to take back? Tyrese Maxey's a good player. Are you going to take Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, and maybe Matisse Thybulle? I don't know. I mean, I'm not doing that. At the end, I'm still going to hold on to Kevin Durant. And you know what? I would tell Kevin Durant, you play well, increase your value, and, you know, maybe we'll explore everything again in December, January, and February. Or maybe Kevin Durant says, you know what, Brooklyn's the best place for me.
Yeah, I would imagine that would probably be where he lands. I mentioned Kyrie, who opted into his deal, which makes sense. There was no way anyone was going to assign him to an extended contract, considering what's happened with him the last couple of years. How important a season is this for him? Like, is there a chance that he is traded? It's so hard to orchestrate a trade for a player with that type of contract. And of course, the Lakers were rumored to be interested in Kyrie. Is he for sure a Brooklyn Net opening day?
No, I think if Kevin Durant were to get moved, I think they'd be trying to do something with Kyrie. And if Kevin Durant, who knows? You know, it's weird that Kevin Durant is calling out everybody but Kyrie, and it seems like Kyrie is responsible for a lot of the nonsense that's happened. So if Kevin Durant went to them, the Nets, and said, you know what, get rid of him and they'll make me happy, then they'll trade him. If not, you know, there's still a scenario where both could be on the team. And I, you know, that I did laugh at that report about, I think Rick Bucher had said that Kyrie's contract, he wanted to play just 60 games, which is hilarious, and that he doesn't want to play back-to-backs because he called them inhumane. And then you get the report from Shams Charania that since Kyrie is opted into his contract, he's been real professional. Well, that story warms my heart. I don't care how professional he is in July and August. You care how professional he is the day that he shows up for training camp until the final day of the next season. That's all you care about. And he's been, and he hasn't been professional his first 3 years there, especially when he ghosted the team 2 years ago. So a lot of this stuff, you know, I heard you talking before, you know, we like getting all this stuff in, you know, July and August when it's kind of a dead period in the NBA, but a lot of it is nonsense. I mean, you start hearing someone brag about how professional Kyrie Irving has been. I mean, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, trying to do sports radio in August at times can be inhumane. Like, playing back-to-backs, exactly. That's inhumane. You know what, I missed that. Do you think that's inhumane, Frank, to play back-to-back basketball games getting paid millions of dollars?
And to think that, you know, when the NBA started with guys like Bill Russell, what are they doing? They're taking buses and trains, you know, the day of a game, playing back-to-back. And, you know, it's absurd to say something like that, especially, you know, when you look at people in Canada, people in the U.S. that struggle to meet ends meet, that work multiple jobs, and this guy's got to play 82 basketball games. He outsmarts himself all the time. But as you know, there are people that are completely behind him 100% and would agree with him.
Yeah.
And all it takes is a few people, and I think social media has a lot to do with that because it's not the real world and so few people are on social media. But, you know, if you're looking for, you know, affirmation on social media, you can get it. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that think that Kyrie has been mistreated and, yes, he should only want to play 60 games. So, you know, if he's looking for that validation, he could certainly find it somewhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You just head into your own media silo and you'll get all the answers that you'd like. You know, this country was very interesting. I mean, the report that Shams had about him wanting Steve Nash fired, it made a lot of noise up here, naturally. And Steve Nash, the greatest basketball player this country's ever produced, Hall of Famer. Do you think, like, I understand there were high expectations, and a couple of seasons ago they were just a toenail away from beating the eventual champions in the postseason. But has Steve Nash's reputation taken a hit over these last couple of months?
I think it has in terms of people just look at the results. But again, I just rattled off the games played by all these guys. So, yes, Steve's a young coach. Did they get swept? Yeah, all those games were close in the first round. And guess what? You know, Kevin Durant, who had a really good regular season, did not have a good playoff. And Kyrie, after playing well in game one, was terrible in the final 30 seconds of game one, which cost him the game. And then he wasn't good the last three games. And then James Harden wanted to be traded. Ben Simmons didn't want to play. You still win with stars in this league. You know, look at the two teams that made the NBA Finals. And at one point last year, the Nets were in first place when at least Kevin Durant was healthy. So I think it's really unfair to Steve. You know, is he the best coach in the NBA? No. Is he getting better? Absolutely. You know, but he's only going to be as good as his best players, and if they're playing, and that's been the issue. And it's funny, last year, if you remember, there was all this talk about breaking the code and violating the code among players. How about calling out a guy? I mean, first of all, it's wrong to do it to any coach, but how about doing it to a guy that is from your era, in theory, you did play against, Steve Nash. You were with him in Golden State, and now he's your head coach in Brooklyn, and he also happens to be a two-time MVP, who all of his teammates that have ever played with him have universally liked him. And, you know, Steve Nash, you know, I do the games on the S Network. Steve Nash has never said a bad word about Kevin Durant. And that's how you return the favor. I think the whole thing, it's distasteful. I think it makes Kevin Durant look really bad. He's too good of a player to be going down this road. It's, you know, it's a shame. He's going to be 34 in September. You know, this is kind of like the behavior of like a 23 and a 24-year-old. Not of a guy that has won two championships, has been a two-time finals MVP. There's just a better way to handle it than the way that he has handled it.
I agree 100%. No, it's yeah. This is way too close to the top of his Wikipedia page when it's all said and done, I imagine.
Right.
All right, before we let you go, I do want to gauge the temperature on this Aaron Judge thing. He hits another home run yesterday. He's still on pace for 60, which we know the record's 73, and Barry Bonds has that, and we know everything that surrounds that. But there is the American League record, and there's the Yankee record of 61. Like, how significant is that, and how much attention is that getting in New York?
Oh, it's huge. And, you know, New York is still a big baseball town, especially this year where both the Mets and the Yankees are very good. And, the expanded playoffs, you know, everyone's going to make it. It's becoming like the NBA and the NHL. Everyone's going to make the playoffs. But it's a huge story. And it's also, you know, there's a bit of a cloud over it just because he's going to be a free agent this offseason. And there's a lot of people that think he's going to leave. I think Buster only about a month ago reported that, you know, it looks like he's leaning toward leaving. And I keep thinking about, you know, the late, great George Steinbrenner, what would be happening now with Aaron Judge going for the home run record and possibly leaving as a free agent. But remember, the Yankees did lose a free agent a few years back, Robinson Cano. Mm-hmm. Remember, he was a free agent. I think he was hooked up with
Jay-Z,
wasn't it? Rock Nation.
Yep.
And then he signed that huge deal in Seattle, was never the same player again. But it's a little bit different because, you know, Robinson Cano wasn't the best player on their team. Now you have, you know, a guy that could be the MVP of the league, which would be pretty fascinating. If he wins MVP, Yankees will be a playoff team. I have no idea how well they'll do in the playoffs. But if he were just to walk, that'd be pretty amazing. But to your point, It's a huge story, and as you know, if he stays healthy, you know, there's a lot going on in September, especially here in New York. You got the U.S. Open, college football. You have the NFL starts. We have two teams here. You get ready for training camp with the hockey teams and the basketball teams. But September, Aaron Judge could own that month, you know, with this home run chase.
Yeah, 100%. No, and I anticipate that. As long as he stays healthy, which he has so far this season, I can also anticipate Steve Cohen throwing everything at him, right? Like, wouldn't that be just one of the most insane stories of this offseason if he goes across town to the Mets and signs a ludicrous, because there's only a few teams that can outbid the Yankees, and it feels like one of them plays in the same city.
Yeah, and you know, there's been talk about the Chicago Cubs, and obviously he's a Northern California guy. There's been talk about the San Francisco Giants, the Dodgers, who seem to go after everybody, so maybe they would be involved, and there's been talk about the Red Sox as well. So, but the Mets, that would be fascinating. And if he left the Yankees to go to the New York Mets, because I know there's one person who's no longer with us who would never allow that to happen. And I mentioned his name before, that's George Steinbrenner. There's no way that's happening. There's no chance.
No, you are 100% right on that. Frank, always great to chat. Thanks so much for this.
Good. Enjoy the rest of the summer. And thanks to Kevin Durant for giving us something to talk about.
Yes, we appreciate it. No more inhumane radio shows. Thanks, Frank.
Exactly. Take care.
You too. There's Frank Isola, ESPN's Around the Horn, PTI, Sirius XM, NBA Radio, Nets on Yes. Okay, what we just talked about first. The Aaron Judge thing is super fascinating, super interesting. The Yankees no longer going to win 120 games because they've fallen on hard times. They still have a 10-game lead in the division. They're going to win the division going away. They have serious, serious question marks now going into the postseason, not the least of which involves their bullpen, which is totally different without Michael King. Offense is still good, and Aaron Judge, as long as he stays healthy, seems like he's the real deal. That's still in question, though. Got a month and a half to go. But yeah, him, 60 and 61 home runs still means something. 73 is the record, okay? there's no debate. Yeah, it happened in a different era, no doubt. Barry Bonds was roided up, facing a bunch of pitchers who were also roided up. He's the only guy that hit 73 home runs. That's the record. The American League record's still 61. Yankees record, still 61. That means something. And secondarily, the Durant thing. Frank's right. Like, say what you will about Kevin Durant and his persona, whether that's on podcasts, in interviews, on Twitter, whatever, whatever, whatever. He's one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived. And it's ever since the word go, right? And for some reason, he thought he needed validation. He needed to be closer to LeBron James in people's eyes. And the only way to do that was to win a championship. So we went to Golden State. And a lot of people derided him for that because he joined a ready-made contender. But he was the best player on that team. He won finals MVP a couple of times. But he wasn't the star of that team. It was Steph Curry. There's just no way around it. Steph Curry was the face of those Warriors championship teams and still is. This guy is so worried about perception that the Warriors moving off of him, regrouping, retooling, being one of the best franchises in all of pro sports, and then getting to a finals and winning one without him, that would turn him to the dark side, turn him into like Darth Vader, turn him even like a supercharged version of the guy that's been a Twitter troll over the last decade, is beneath him and sullying the reputation and the story of a great player and one of the greatest that I've ever seen play the game of basketball. Now, maybe there's still time to put the toothpaste back in the tube, because I do think, like, if it's all about winning and it's all about showing those folks in Northern California that you've moved on too. And you know what? I don't even think about you. If it's all about winning, it's hard not to think that the best opportunity for him to do that is still in Brooklyn with the Nets. That's why I think it might be a combination of things. And it has to involve how Kyrie Irving was treated. It would be nice to have some clarity on this too, right? Like, I do enjoy the reports and the amount of information that can still be filled in around the edges, which allows us to have all types of different theories. And sometimes when you have too defined an idea of what's happening, it doesn't allow for a more interesting conversation, because you know exactly. I can't guess as to what Kevin Durant's thinking, but boy, asking for your head coach and your GM to be fired, if that's not true or you don't want us to believe it, it would be nice to hear from you, and we haven't yet. That is coming. The NFL preseason, oh, it's coming. We already had a game, but in earnest, it happens this weekend. We're going to talk to Seth Wickersham next. ESPN senior writer has a great write-up on Sean McVay and everything that went into his offseason after winning a Super Bowl title. He is next as the Fan Drive Time continues. I'm Ben Ennis, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.